To see examples of what we talk about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction.
Hello, I have nothing clever to say. My name is Don Moore, and sitting across from me is...
Oh, and we are...
Two Dimension Podcast, the comic book podcast with...
No direction. But today we have a direction.
Yeah, unfortunately, and I apologize if you didn't like the last episode. I had so much fun talking about Man-Wolf and Mantis, and I was talking to Al on the phone, saying, you know, just how much I enjoyed putting the blog together. And I kind of made up a TV show of Man-Wolf, Mantis, and Tigra.
And, yeah, that's right. Talk about it.
Well, it was just a joke, but I said, I could see them doing like a comic book, like a TV show from the 70s, where Man-Wolf and Mantis and Tigra come back. You know, Man-Wolf was in Otherworld. I don't know if he ever left Otherworld. They must have brought him back at one point. Mantis, you know, ended up marrying that... I can't remember what those plant people were, but...
Kotati.
Yeah. But she ended up marrying, I guess, the main one that was came back as the ghost of the dead swordsman.
Right.
And as Al always says, she ended up marrying one of those, which was the tree.
Yeah, she married the tree guy.
And Tigra was a character called the Cat in the 1972. In 74, she turned into Tigra, the werewolf, which is
That book right there, I believe it's one of those books.
Yeah, it's the giant size of Indra.
Yeah, there's Mantis marrying the ghostly swordsman. Yeah, it was really a tree.
That's on the blog. But Tigra was the character I always liked. She ended up fighting in the Fantastic Four and stuff. But I just thought it would be really odd if you had these early 70s characters all get together. And I was always thinking they'd end up moving to Hollywood and setting up like a production company doing stunts for TV shows. And I said, why? You know, they were asking Man-Wolf. I says, well, you had it made. You know, why did you come back here? I says, you know, I know everybody thinks it'd be nice to be considered a god and be royalty and be treated. It says, man, people were always brushing my fur. They're always wiping my butt. I couldn't even wipe my own butt. It just gets old after a while. And then he asked Mantis, why did you come back? He says, you even have to ask? I was married to a tree. Come on. And then, you know, Tigra says, well, the problem was I couldn't make any money. I always had to live with the Avengers or something. So anytime I tried to get work, it was always offered the porn industry. I'm not going to do that, you know. He was going to hire a tiger woman in a bikini all the time. But nevertheless, it was just kind of a joke I said to Al. And I don't think you were familiar with Tigra too much.
Oh, I was familiar with Tigra, but I didn't know her whole story. I was familiar with the character because I had bought a couple of that Marvel team up. I mean, I would buy the book for John Bernard,
yeah,
or stuff like that, or maybe George Perez. I remember seeing her in FF. Some Avengers, and I remember seeing Marvel Chillers, and also I didn't even realize that the black and white book that you sent me the link to, Monsters Unleashed number either 10 or 8, I can't remember which one it was.
Yeah,
that has a story with her, and then I remembered seeing that because it was a Tony DeZuniga,
which is nice,
yeah. So I do remember, but I didn't know her origin until you told me about.
Yeah, it was Giant-Sized Creatures number one, featuring a werewolf by night, and introducing, for the first time, Tiger the Werewoman.
Who previously, which I didn't know this, was the cat, which I did have, the first issue, because it was Wally Wood and Marie Severin, but I didn't have all the other issues after that, so I had no idea that the cat became Tiger. I always thought that the cat ended up joining the Avengers, and the cat was Patsy Walker, but boy, was I wrong. The original cat is Greer Nelson.
Yeah.
She became Tigra, and then Patsy Walker joined the Avengers. They found, like, the cat suit in a warehouse somewhere, and they made her, and she turned into the cat at that point. Hellcat, I should say.
Yeah, she came Hellcat.
And then we decided we were going to try to round up as many of these books and try to see if we could figure out this convoluted storyline.
Well, my introduction to it was I bought 1974. I bought over the summer.
A great year, by the way.
Yeah, it was a great year. But I bought Giant Size Creatures number one. And I love the giant size books because it was always a front story.
Was that the main reason you bought it, because it was a giant size book, so you were getting more bang for your buck?
Well, you always brought
like
that up, and I guess I never thought about it. I never bought, like, DC's Dollar Comics. They did in the late 70s or 76.
No, you never did.
I bought a couple, but I was always disappointed with them because it was always, like, inventory stories that weren't that good. There were inventory stories that I didn't care for much. But the DC 100-page spectaculars, it was always reprint stories that were just fantastic. Sometimes they'd have new material, but even the new material was terrific. But the giant-sized books Marvel had, it had a regular, you know, page count, a 22-page story in the front of Fantastic Four, Avengers, whatever. But they were always done by Rick Buckler, when I liked Rick Buckler's work. Dave Cockrum, you know, different people like that. And so it was always kind of fun, and they always had fantastic backups, you know, old Fantastic Four reprints. The Giant Size Avengers 1 had that Wasp story that she fought the Magician, which was kind of famous, Larry Lieber drew. And it also had a Captain America original Human Torch story from the Timely days, which seemed ancient, you know, to me in 74. Well, Giant Size Creatures number one had that Reed Crandall werewolf story.
Very nice one.
It was nice. And I'll tell you, I guess what surprised me was in that story, the werewolf he was cohesive. I mean, he still thought. He realized he was a werewolf, but he wasn't like,
Yeah, right.
And it was a really scary looking werewolf, even though the guy's kind of, it reminded me a little bit of the Little Rascals, like, wait a minute, I'm a werewolf, what is this, you know? But yeah, it was, see, I did love those. It was a lot of comics, but I mean, you know, for 35 cents you got a lot of material, and it was material I really liked. But the Giant Size Creatures, I bought it because Tiger was on the cover, you know, it fascinated me. Werewolf by Night, I have to admit, I keep forgetting he's in that book. You know, he's the main character.
Book, yeah.
But I was telling Al, I thought they were on an island, like it was a plane crash. Well, when I was reading the book again, it wasn't. I guess she just decided she needed a vacation because of all the stuff going on. And it told her backstory as the cat. And it told basically as a recap of it. And the werewolf, I guess, is there. They're in Ojai, California.
Yep.
On the beach, and the werewolf, you know, he's the guy, but he's walking around. He's okay. And all of a sudden, it's a full moon. Hydra shows up. She's the cat. She's fighting Hydra as the cat. And all of a sudden, he shows up. And then, this...
They zap her. And then the whatchamacallit, the cat people, which was the lady who helped her, when she was the Greer Nelson and the cat, she was, her husband, policeman, got killed, right, in the line of duty. So she was looking for work, and she got a job with this lady scientist who was coming up with some device that would help women to empower them, to make them, you know, more like, you know, super senses or whatever, which is like, okay, you really need, like, a device for that? All right. And it was basically this woman, Dr. Tumala, was working for some weird eccentric guy who wanted to create a race of super people, and he had a bunch of hell spots or something like that.
Yeah, that was
over the top.
Well, you know, you say over the top, but unfortunately, after he died, you know, one of his minions took over and it became Hooters restaurants.
Yes, exactly right. Exactly right.
See, I remember that there's a recap in the book. I didn't catch all that. All I knew is that she worked with this doctor, this white-haired lady doctor.
Yeah.
And the cat was pretty awesome. I mean, she didn't, she fought acrobatically with her whole body.
She but, had you these know, claws that would come out, like, yeah. You know, Spider-Man things or
But
something.
I just remember she would drop down, and I remember she would use her legs, but one thing I always liked about it was it actually looked like she was fighting. Like, if you ever see that movie, The Transporter, the guy jumps up and does that double kick?
Yeah.
She was twisting her hips and stuff, and, I mean, when I say that the comic books actually wasn't showing real fighting, but when you saw her, she wasn't fighting like a comic book girl like Mary Marvel or anything.
No, she was fighting cat-like.
Yeah, and she looked tough. I mean, it was convincing. And, you know, those claws were kind of neat. They were scary.
Yeah, no doubt.
Like I said, it's just this character, the cat. I never read those comic books, but I do remember seeing advertisements for them in 72.
Well, you know what the deal was, and I read about this. In 72, Stan got the bright idea that he wanted to do three female-based books. So he did The Cat, he did Night Nurse, and he did Shauna the She-Devil.
Yeah.
That was the third one by Ross Andrew. So, you know, the first issue of The Cat by Wally Wood and Marie Severin was greatness. I don't remember buying the other ones, but the second one by Marie Severin and Jim Mooney was great, too.
Yeah, it was good.
And the fourth issue was by Starlin and Alan Weiss. And I think I actually bought the fourth issue, but I didn't get the third one.
Yeah, the third was by
Everett. It was by Bill Everett some other person.
It was a woman.
It was a woman, yeah, who I'd never heard of before. And Everett inked it, and it was really nice. I mean, it looked like Bill Everett, but I'd never even came across it.
Yeah, she did. I think they said layouts. I guess the lady artist, she kind of lightly penciled layouts, and then Bill Everett finished it.
Yeah, so all four issues are really nice or whatever. It tells her story.
Right.
And then it just ends at the end. They didn't sell well, so it's just...
Well, that's what... I never knew these. I remember seeing The Cat advertised, and I never bought them. One reason why was those books in 72, that's when the Beast, you know, from X-Men became the Gray Beast, you know, later the Blue Beast.
Yeah.
A friend of mine had that book, and I just found it depressing. I didn't like how the cover was laid out, which is how the cat was. It had a lot of dark colors. And at first, I don't know what the Beast was in, if it was Creatures of the Loose or whatever.
Amazing Adventures.
It was Amazing Adventures.
Yeah, I read a couple of them.
But to me, it was depressing. The only thing I didn't find depressing was when he remembered the X-Men. They had a drawing of the old X-Men, including Havoc. But I guess the Beast was working in some... for some company in their laboratory, and he had something to test tube and says, well, why not? And he drank it, and all of a sudden he turned into that furry beast, and it was just nothing but depression and misunderstanding.
Yeah.
But what Al was saying about the female books, what Roy Thomas wanted to do was had female creators.
Yeah, yeah, Linda Feit did right. Wrote
but
she the
wrote,
cat.
She wrote all the issues of the cat. Yeah,
and she was connect. She was Trimpy's wife, maybe.
I didn't know who she was.
I think she's connected. She was married to Herb Trimpy. I think. I'll double check later if we screwed up.
But Marie Severin drew him, and the first issue Wally Wood inked, and I was reading. Marie Severin was kind of shocked. She thought it was good, but she said, I didn't draw her so revealing. You know, she said that was all Wally, which is what Wally Wood was into.
Of course.
But, she said...
Well, you know that there's some panels that he did where he actually drew, like, her naked, and the Marie Severin, whoever the production artist, had to white it out.
Yeah.
He was being a smart guy or whatever. You know?
Oh, it was Wally Wood.
And not only that, but if you notice on the first issue... The Dr. Tumulo, the old lady, Marie Severin, redrew her face because it's not Wally Wood faces on her. I don't know what the problem was, but she redrew the face of the old scientist.
They had a tendency to redraw faces on a lot
of
stuff.
Yeah, they sure did back then. Yeah.
But I have to admit, when I do see the examples, it makes sense. Like Jim Starlin did a Captain Marvel issue where, you know, it's one of those... How many issues you seen where the guy, the character, standing with his legs spread and his arms spread out, you know, the power pose? And it's a famous Jim Starlin cover of Captain Marvel in that Gil Kane Captain Marvel uniform. And John Romita redrew the face. Well, when you see Jim Starlin's face, it looks fine too, but it's real narrow. It's real narrow. And, you know, John Romita redrew it, put it on, and it looks like it belongs. But, yeah, it's actually a better choice.
And yeah.
Last episode, we talked about Jack Kirby drawing Conan for that giant size.
Yeah, we found that.
Well, if you see the actual Jack Kirby pencils, and they're nice, but Conan's kind of looking upward a little bit, and you don't see all of his face. And John Romita redrew the face on that one.
Oh, wow.
And okay. I never noticed it because it looks like a Jack Kirby Conan face. But we'll put that on the blog. It's kind of interesting.
You have the before and after of
it?
Oh, okay.
So I can understand why Maurice Severin would probably have to redraw something Wally Wood did.
What I understood was that, we talked about it before, was that Romita didn't want to do it, but Stan or the editors told him to do it. And they did it to Gene Colan on some issues, and it's really jarring when you see that one, you know, because it's just like, hey, wait a minute. You know, all of a sudden you got a John Romita head on a Gene Colan character.
Yeah, sometimes it didn't work.
Sometimes
it didn't work and it was bad, like Jack Kirby's Superman or Jimmy Olsen work where they put Superman in it.
Plastino and Murphy Anderson would do the Jimmy Olsen and Superman heads or whatever. Yeah, it was jarring. I can tell before why. So there was there's some Lois Lane covers that they got Plastino or somebody to do his Superman over Neil Adams' artwork, which is like, are you kidding me? It's like, okay, whatever, DC. You know.
But back to the cat, that first issue, it was kind of interesting because I never read her full story. I've only read it in recaps. But she basically was a sophomore in college, and she was crossing the She was in a hurry with one of her classmates, and a policeman was there. You got to understand, this is in '72, so the world was a bit different. But the cop was there, and the friend says, "Oh, don't talk to cops." And the guy says, "Listen, today's my first day on the job on patrol, and I prefer the term policeman." There's a lot of unrest, especially student unrest, you know, in the early 70s especially. There was a lot of race riots. My ship went through a big race riot in like 72.
That's crazy.
And when I went on the ship, that's all I heard about was the Kitty Hawks race riots, and it was pretty rough. And they even had a rule, which didn't go over too well, that you couldn't have two black men or two white men walking down the passageway. It had to be a black man and a white man. It had to be a mix. And of course, you know, you can't do that, but it was that severe at the time. It's hard to imagine now. I mean, even though there's still unrest.
Yeah, there's stuff going on now.
But it was really tense then. Also, women's lib, which is in this book they talked about, was that she ended up getting a relationship with that policeman. They ended up getting married. And he didn't want her to go on to college. She was wanting to go back to school. And she was talking about she kind of molded her personality around what he wanted. And it was how it was at the time. Well, the women stayed home.
They portrayed her as wishy-washy. But all the female empowerment stuff is real, like we talked about, heavy-handed in these books. I mean, it's like boing, you know.
Yeah, and they kind of made the guy, even though she never referred to it, they made the guy kind of a jerk, you know. He was real heavy-handed and tough on her.
And later on, the guy who married Patsy Walker is made into
a jerk, too. Yeah.
Two different writers, two different jerks.
Yeah. Well, one thing about... We'll get to Patsy Walker in a second.
Yeah, we'll get to her later, yeah.
But anyway, Greer Grant, you know, she tries to find work. It is Greer Grant, right?
Greer Nelson.
Oh, Greer Nelson, pardon me.
But I think it might be Greer Grant Nelson or something like that, but I think they call it Greer Nelson, you know,
but
usually.
When she's trying to find work, you know, she explained about she was like a biology major or something in college. And they said, "Well, that's interesting." She says, "We don't have any pieces like that. Can you type? You know, and later, can you take shorthand?" That's all they were wanting. It was, you know, ladies'
secretaries.
Jobs. And she was about to give up, and that's when she ran into her old professor, who was, you know...
Tumalo.
Yeah, she brought her into her lab, and she was working on all these projects. Well, that's when the guy shows up that was financing everything. She says her funds were tight through the university, so this guy was funding her. They built all this giant, really awesome-looking, Wally Wood-looking equipment. And
Hell yeah.
It was supposed to bring women to their full potential.
And he had another woman that he was going to use as the as an example. The guy, I forgot what his name was, but he had another woman, and Dr. Tumala wanted to use Greer Nelson as the experiment or whatever, but he... But he had his woman who was really, like, unprepared or like kind of like...
Well, she was an airhead.
She was an airhead. And then the other doctor said, okay, well, while we're doing yours, she still... She did the experiment on Greer Nelson also.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing was the doctor was upset. She said she wasn't prepared. She wasn't, you know, the type of, you know...
But research, it was the guy's girlfriend.
Yeah. Research, a lot of screening and stuff. And he was adamant. So Greer Nelson volunteered and says, doctor, you can use me as well. And that changed it. So they did both experiments, and but the guy's girlfriend didn't really follow through and do all the stuff she's supposed to do, whereas Greer Nelson did. And Greer Nelson got acrobatic, stronger, you know, smarter, you know.
Yeah, she had that, like it kind of like did something to your senses, or you're more intuitive. Everything is, everything is stronger. You know, your strength, agility.
One thing reading this now. I was always wondering when I read it, and when I liked it, it was fun. But I kept thinking, well, why does it empower women? Why does it empower every? I understand that, you know, women were mistreated back then. There wasn't a lot of rights that they do enjoy now. It's just, but I think, what are they going to do? Empower all the women? They're going to take over, and we're going to be the slaves? It's going to be a race of Amazons? Wait a minute.
Race of Amazons.
Not liking this. Not liking this at all.
That's what the bad guy in the first story wanted to do, kind of. That's what it seems to me like what he wanted to do, create a race of Amazons or super
people. He wasn't thinking it through. Yeah, but he had that collar that... And he was the one that created the cat costume. He had the woman, after she went through the stuff, he put her in that cat costume, and he put that on... That collar on her, and all of a sudden she was subservient to him.
That's right, I forgot about that.
And and he was the one that had the cat claws designed, which were actually pretty neat. And she ended up dying. She wasn't ready, she didn't fulfill it.
Yeah, she fell. She fell off. Yeah. She was doing one of the stunts and she fell off or whatever.
Anyway, they saw all of it, and they captured the doctor to have her do it again. And that's when Greer Nelson... got that old costume. She was bringing it to show the doctor what was happening.
That's right.
And then she ended up using it to save the doctor. And then she became the cat.
Yes. Yeah.
I guess what was strange was they were doing that to bring interest to the girls. But I'm looking at that cover, and that cover, it looks like a bad crime, you know, pulp novel, or a bad sex novel. I mean, it was a black and yellow cover. It looked sinister. And not that girls always want flowery pink things that look like Barbie, but it didn't look like anything that would appeal to a girl.
It might have been like a way to appeal to girls, but it ended up appealing to the guys because of the way Wally Wood drew the character.
Yeah, exactly.
The character,
and Wally Wood, whose greatness, and him and Marie Severin made a really good team.
Oh, yeah.
I love Marie Severin and Wally Wood.
Both from EC, you know.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I noticed when Wally Wood inked it, he seemed like he tried to have a John Severin kind of look to it. You know, he was trying to keep Marie Severin, even though the women's faces were absolute Wally Wood faces.
Sure, yeah.
But it was good work, but Wally Wood wouldn't be the one I would choose for a girl's comic, you know.
Who would have been your pick better than...
Well, I mean...
Because I always thought Wally Wood drew beautiful women, you know. Who would you pick? Like, not Kirby.
No.
Kirby wasn't like...
Well, when I say
okay.
that, Wally Wood did do beautiful women, but to me, and I'm sure there's a lot of women that may enjoy Wally Wood's work, he was greatness, but he drew women to be sexy.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm thinking, if you're trying to appeal to, you know, a lot of girls...
You want her to make her look less sexy,
well,
more
you
athletic,
want somebody
maybe?
You can cheer for. You know, my wife, and this is one of the things I love about her, was... Whenever you watch a TV show and there's a female character, my wife roots for her. She never stopped being the 8-year-old girl that cheers for the girls. And if there's like a dance show or a talent show, if it's a guy against a girl, she's always rooting for the girls and gets upset if the girl doesn't win. I like Star Trek, and when Voyager was on, you know, my wife, she'll watch it with me sometimes, but not her favorite. And when Voyager came on, and when the introduction came on, it showed the rings of, you know, like a Saturn. And you, when it gets close, they turn into asteroids, you know. She was, like, fascinated by it. And then she was shocked to find out the captain was a woman. And after that, she was like, oh, it's Star Trek. And she'd run and sit down with me. I says, you don't watch Star Trek. That was before I knew the captain was a woman. And she always watched it because the captain was female. I was watching the Michelle Yeoh movie, Wing Chun. And when Michelle Yeoh had to go talk to her instructor, the instructor was Lee Wing Chun, the nun. And when she went and talked to her, Myrna says, instructor's a woman? And all of a sudden, she was just sucked into the movie even further.
Well, if you remember at the time, the only books that were geared towards women back then were like the romance books and the Archies. Not that they're geared towards women, but were more, you know, acceptable. You know, right. So this was a way to bring women into the superhero world, which is, I think, what they wanted to do. So they kind of made a decision to get a superhero. They got a female. I mean, when you think about it, yeah, it's Hollywood inking. It's really Marie Severin drawing it.
Yes,
you know,
so and quite well.
You can actually, you can't put all the blame on him.
No,
you can give some of it to her,
to me,
too. You know?
The cover is why I did it.
Yeah.
I think the cover, they could have done it a different type of graphic style and stuff. And even the logo, you know, it's got those slash letters and stuff. It doesn't look like it was for women. It looked like it was for men in prison, is what it looked like.
I'm sure they enjoyed it too.
Yeah, I'm sure. But it didn't look like
maybe it was for women in prison.
Like I said, in the graphics the women tend to go to, it's not the pink and flowery all. Some of them like it, but if you ever look at stuff geared for women, there's a whole variety of things, but it didn't look like that one. That one, it looked harsh, and even as a kid, it didn't really. I thought the character was kind of neat looking, but the cover didn't appeal to me either. And
no, I liked it. It was very moody, and you know, but yeah, like you're right. I think it appeals more to guys than it does to women.
Yeah, well, and that's it. I understand when Roy Thomas is wanting to have women creators, and it seemed like he really made an effort. But
like, I mean, Shauna the She-Devil was a lot lighter.
Yeah.
Because she's in the jungle, and then Night Nurse was, you know, a nurse. So, you know, you had Shauna the She-Devil was Ross Andrew, and Night Nurse was Wynn Mortimer, who was, like, a lot of times was a romance artist. So maybe those might have been more appealing. Then again, who knows what? Who really knew what was going to be appealing to, like, you know, women then? I think they were just throwing things at the... I mean, I honestly think that, yeah, they wanted to appeal to women, but I also think they wanted to appeal to the people that felt, you know, politically like, you know, oh, women empowerment too or whatever. I think they were trying to be relevant is what I'm trying to say and appeal to women, but they were trying to get their cake and eat it too. They wanted to be relevant, appeal to women, but not necessarily... The guys won't like it, you know what I mean? So.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, the problem is if you're trying to appeal to a group and you're not part of that group, it's hard, you know, to see the perspective.
But, I don't see the problem, but, you know, I can understand your point of view.
Well, when I say that I don't see it as a problem, I'm just saying that I understand why it didn't appeal. And the second issue, Jim Mooney inked it, really nice. All four of those issues I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
But, you know, it didn't sell well for whatever reason. I think the cat was a great character. And when I read her in Werewolf or Creatures 1, I thought she was fantastic. I think, actually, Giant Size Creatures 1 has the look that the cat should have had. You know, that cover, it had blue on it. You know, it was colorful.
Well, it was Tigra, a different character.
Yeah.
You know, it was more like, yeah. And then at that point, you're going to go to a different... art team, then Tony Isabella gets involved, and she goes from being like a superhero to like a supernatural kind of character or whatever, you know. So she's like, you know, it's funny about it, if you notice it, and we'll probably show you the panel or whatever, but if you notice it in the Giant Size Creatures, there's one panel where she's like on the beach and she's wearing a bikini. There's a shot from behind her and there's something going on in the foreground. They drew her butt, a little bit of her butt crack, so I'm going like, how did this one get by the, this one got by the, whatchamacallit, code or whatever. Nobody noticed that, but, you know, dirty guys like me did see it.
Oh, at 12 years old, I hit puberty. I was loving it. You know,
So in this issue, in the Giant Size Creatures, where she changes to Tigra for whatever reason, I guess they figured the cat character wasn't going anywhere, so they try to make her into, like, a supernatural character, and she gets shot by Hydra on the beach or whatever, and then they take her to, like, you know, the uh, at Hydra's headquarters, and then they're doing, you know, the experiments with Dr. Tumalo or whatever.
Right.
And then, you know, then we find out that Dr. Tumalo is part of a race of cat people, and the only way they're going to be able to revive her because she's dying is to turn her into a cat person, and they need, like, a ring and some other stuff, too. Do you remember?
Right. Well, yeah, and they... When I was a kid, I thought what she's referring to, because she says, your people, you know, evolved from apes.
My
people evolved from cats. And I thought she was supposed to be Asian. And I just thought that the artist wasn't good enough to draw Asian people. Come to find out it wasn't right. They were just regular Caucasian people.
Yeah.
But what was neat was in that room, they had everybody with incense, and they're all standing around holding hands, chanting or whatever. And all of a sudden, she turned into Tigra, as you say. You can tell Al speaks Spanish.
Tigra, Tigra, either way, I don't know.
I like them both. But all of a sudden, she was in a bikini with little fangs all the way as the trim.
and stripes. Like if she's like, you know, Tony the Tiger's girlfriend or something like that.
And red hair.
And red hair.
Yeah, her black hair turned into red hair, and she had those cat eyes. She was awesome. And she's fighting Hydra. At one point, Hydra catch her on the beach, put her in a little cage in this really underground laboratory like James Bond would have, and the werewolf shows up. And she was able to change at will back to Greer Nelson.
Nelson, yeah.
And at the very end of the story, I guess after the werewolf helped fight off Hydra, and then the doctor released the Black Plague, you know, killed all the Hydra agents, and it was over. But all of a sudden, the werewolf was fighting. I guess he was hot for her.
Yeah, it was.
And then she turned back into Greer Nelson. And the werewolf just stood and looked at her. You know, black hair, black bikini. And then she left. Or he left. And then all of a sudden, she turned back into Tigra. And he said, what happened? And the doctor explained that your body adapted so fully to it that it's hard to change back. You're going to go back to this one. It seemed like she was okay with just being Tigra, you know. And,
yeah.
And that was the end of the issue, and then it went to that really awesome werewolf story.
Well, I got to tell you, though, I'm going to disagree with you on this one, too. If that giant-sized creatures had been inked by Wally Wood as opposed to Vince Coletta, that would have been one of the greatest books ever.
I agree with you.
Ever drawn. Oh, okay, I wasn't sure, because that would have been one of the greatest books ever
absolutely.
Done. Not that Don Perlin and Vince Coletta were that bad on. They were okay. They were fine. But if Wood would have gotten it with all the shadowing and all the cross hatching and all that stuff, I would have bought that book back in 1974, as opposed to like looking at it and going like. Eh.
Well, see, here's something. This is, you can't ever gauge everything in life because, and I've said this on the show, and I've told, you know, Al several times, and he pointed out, Don Perlin drew this book. Don Perlin was an artist that I've never liked. It was an artist, I mean, I don't lose sleep over it, but I just always looked at Don Perlin as an uninteresting artist. And I never hated him, but I've never cared for his work. And but he drew this one, and this is absolutely one of my favorite comics. I've always kept it. It's always been a favorite. I used to pull it out and just look through it. It's just exciting, and to me. I love some of the stuff he did. I loved how he drew Tigra jumping around, you know, fighting people. I loved... It was just fun. It was kind of, to me, a bubblegum comic book.
Sure it was, yeah.
And Vince Coletta is one that I've always disliked immensely.
He did a good job.
Yeah, it was fine. It could have been better with somebody else, but it wasn't bad. And Tony and Isabella isn't a writer I've ever really enjoyed too much either, but I really enjoyed this one.
You know, it's funny, in subsequent issues of the books, not all of them, and her appearances. He's involved in some of them, but only as a plotter and not as a as a writer. Chris Claremont did that Monsters Unleashed story with her, but I don't even think his wording is that great. I think he was trying to do like another Roy Thomas, Stanley mishmash or whatever. You know, he didn't find his way until he got into the X-Men, I guess, you know.
Well, no, he was doing other work I really liked before X-Men.
Well, he was doing Iron Fist with Burn and stuff like that.
Yeah, the Iron Fist stuff was pretty good, and he was doing Marvel Team-Up.
But the way he wrote it, it's like, you know. And that Marvel, we were talking before, that Marvel Team-Up with Tigra and Spider-Man and the Man-Killer Woman or whatever, that was beyond the pale.
Yeah, I agree with you. That was, in Marvel Team-Up, was that Tigra or was that the cat? It was the cat.
Oh, it was the cat. I'm sorry. It was the cat. That was one of the Patsy Walker territory. That's
right. After the... Was that Patsy Walker? Was that still Greer Grant?
Good question. Well, yeah, you're right. It was Greer. Yeah. It was Greer Nelson because the... Because... Greer, you know Greer. What? Let's just take a break now because we're at the 30-minute mark. We'll play a werewolf-inspired song.
Okay, real quick. After the cat issues, she did show up with Spider-Man in Marvel Team-Up. And anyway, we'll take a break from there.
And then we'll come back and we'll talk about more about Tiger and whatever happened to the cat.
Mama said, there's something weird about Billy. I looked in his room. His bed wasn't slept in at all last night.
Now mama, don't you go talking silly. He's just a young boy. He's just sowing his wild oats, and that's all right. But mama said, no, something real strange about my Billy. The farmer down the road said he lost a few of his sheep last night. I know he's my own flesh and blood, but he makes my I saw him from my window, and he was on the hill just screaming at the moonlight.
Ah, is it any wonder we hate to see the sun go down? And is it any wonder we hate to see the full moon coming around?
So Papa said,
I guess there's only one thing to do. Billy, hand me down my gun, son. Bring along that silver dinner bell.
But mama said,
Papa,
you don't kill him. Cause I just couldn't bear to think about my baby in hell.
But he went down to the blacksmith, got him out of bed and said,
get your fire hot.
Shut up your shutters and close down the doors. We're gonna need all the heat you got. Cause I want you to melt my silver bell down to a single shot. I got a job to do, and I got to get it done before the sun comes up. Said Papa got him. Then we heard a scream. Mama smiled and said, bitch, Billy got him. But when I lifted up my eyes, there was Mama in the doorway staring at the floor. And my big brother Billy never did come home no more.
You can hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you would like to hear our older episodes, you can find them on our blog. Just go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
And that was the five-man electrical band and Werewolf.
That's a song that you said was a big hit, and I have never heard before until you told me, hey, let's play this song. And I'm like, really? I remember their other song, which was called Signs, which was a really big hit. Yeah. Yeah, but not this one so much.
This one, I started listening to radio in 74. Everything happened to me in 74.
Wow, that's intense.
And I really started getting into music and buying records and everything. And that was on the this was on the radio. Also, Grand Funk's Locomotion was on the radio.
Yeah,
What was the song, Midnight in the Oasis?
Oh, Maria Muldaur, yeah.
Yeah, that was a big song on it. What was all Jackson 5, Dancing Machine?
Dancing,
yeah,
dancing.
I love this song.
Yeah, right.
And those pastel color tuxedos and the big afros.
Yeah, afros are good.
But it was those kind of songs. Gordon Lightfoot was on heavy. But anyway, this song was on. It was Werewolf, and that was the last I ever heard of these guys. I found out they broke up a year later.
Well, that's too bad, because I would have liked to have had them do a Where the Tigra song. This is pretty close, I
guess. Well, since we've been talking about werewolves and it was the 70s, we figure we play 70s music throughout.
Yeah, we have a few more things, you know, 70s vibe, feel, you know. 70s were an interesting time. 74 was a year of Pepper Lake Monster, my favorite, or Bernie Wrightson.
Bernie Wrightson.
I think
story,
maybe yeah. Jennifer, too. I don't know. I don't know if that was 74.
It could have been. Man, there was so much of 74.
Yeah, it was an interesting year. It was almost like 74 was almost like the end of the 60s. Around 75, 76, it started changing a lot, you know, at that point.
Yeah.
A lot of bands started breaking up in 74, you know. Genesis, Gabriel left in 75, but they basically broke up in 74. King Crimson was getting towards the end of their run. And a lot of bands just never got any better after 1974, you know what I mean?
It seemed like everything got more corporate after 74.
I think so, yeah. You know, and that corporate usually equals bland, boring, and, you know.
Yeah, everything
and,
changed.
You know.
But I don't know. There was good times in any time you're talking about. But I just remember 71 and 72 kind of, even though there's great albums coming out.
Oh, those great records, and 72 especially.
But I just remember everything was getting kind of like, well, the 60s are over, what are we going to do? And it was kind of crummy sometimes. For some reason, 74, everything just got kind of bright and flowery again for a little bit, and then bam.
That's such is life. But anyway, enough about that. We're still talking about Tigra, and when we left off, she just finished becoming her own character, and then they put her in Marvel Chillers, or whatever they called it, which the first issue was Mordred the Mystic, I believe, and then the third issue became Tigra, where she got the four stories with her. Remember?
Marvel Chillers, that was the big one.
No, Marvel Chillers was the four series with the one where she fights that group called the Rat Pack.
Oh, okay. I'm getting it confused. I thought it was the big horror magazine.
No, that was Monsters Unleashed.
That was a good one. I like Marvel Chillers.
Yeah, that was the story with her and the Rat Pack and Joshua Plague. And
right. She had four issues to it.
Yeah. Yeah, one of them seemed to be a fill-in issue by Frank Robbins, but
yeah, that was a strange one because I was looking at these electronically. I never bought the. I was never aware of them, actually. And I never seen them. And it's one thing Al and I were talking about, and we said before on the show, before comic stores, distribution was really spotty. You might see an issue, and then never see another one again. The cat issues, I only saw in advertisements. I never saw at the store. And I never saw Tiger again. I saw her in Giant-Sized Creatures. And I didn't see her again until the Fantastic Four issues in 77, 3 years later. And in that one, Ben Grimm, the Thing, when she showed up...
Well, she was in a Marvel 2-in-1 with Ben Grimm.
Well, in that Fantastic Four issue, Ben Grimm was thinking about, she didn't act this way when I met her. And then underneath it, a little asterisk, it says, "A Marvel team, or Marvel 2-in-1, number, what, 9 or something?
Yeah, an early one. Yeah.
But, like I said, I never seen that. I never saw her for 3 years. But I never saw her own title. What I found strange, and I'm looking at it, was the first issue with her in it. It had, what was it called? The Red Wolf showed up at the...
Red Wolf was involved in it. Yeah,
the very
him
last...
Him and his wolf dog, or whatever.
The last panel.
Who was in the Avengers, I believe, or connected with the Avengers.
Yeah, he was. I never read the stories, but I remember seeing that he was, at one point, he was with them or fought them or whatever.
Yeah.
But the last panel of that issue has Red Wolf and his giant, I always think of John Buscema kind of dramatic pose. And it's all threatening, and she's there ready. And then the next issue comes out, and he's not in it. And I'm like, what happened? Did I miss something?
Fill-in issue.
Yeah, but it was just so bizarre. He wasn't in it whatsoever, and he didn't show up to, what, the fifth issue of it?
there was a fill-in issue, and then and then the other last two ends the story about the Joshua plague and the rat pack and trying to capture this Indian artifact, the Soul Catcher, which will give him even more power, because it turns out that Joshua Plague at the very end is the Super Skrull, who already has the powers of the FF, and he wants his stick, his Indian stick, to give him even more, and he fights with Red Wolf and Tigra, and then, he gets his comeuppance at the end. We're not going to tell you what happened. We don't want to do spoiler alerts all over the place. You'll have to find Marvel Chillers and, for yourself.
I think the first Tigra issue was number three.
Three, yeah.
And then Red Wolf shows up at the end of three.
And he shouldn't come back till four, five.
I think, I think Red Wolf shows up in nine. It was like three, four issues later.
Yeah, it was five when he shows up. The first one was, was the first Tigra. Four was the Frank Robbins fill-in. And then I think five and six were the Red Wolf and Tigra and the Joshua Plague and the Rat Pack and all that. And then I think the book ended. No, or did it? No, it didn't.
Yeah, I think that was the end of it.
Was that the end of it? Yeah. Okay, yeah.
The Frank Robbins Tigra issue, I liked.
It was really nice.
I didn't care for the inking to it.
It
was Vince Gillette again.
But it wasn't bad. I mean, It was better than the first. The first and the third issue of it was by Will Minio or Mugino.
Yeah.
It's okay.
That one...
I think you're right. I think it was like she had five issues through it, because I think there was two issues by Will Mugino, then there was a Byrne one, and then there was a George Tusker one. So I think there was five issues of Tigra in there.
Yeah, and John Byrne did the Red Wolf issue, and it was neat. And that's one thing I was going to talk about was Tigra. When Don Perlin drew her, she had a look. Her hair was sleek and straight. And when John Byrne drew her, she looked like she had
she had frizzier hair, didn't she?
Yeah, which was really neat. But
it was different.
And he had a Wally Wood kind of shadow in her hair with a highlight around it, which was neat looking. And he made her look even more alien and feline looking.
Yeah, he did.
And which it was
a little more cartoony.
Yeah, which is what I liked about it.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay. And I actually kind of thought that sometimes you see something like that, it's a little different to what the original artist had done, but then everybody draws that way. Not so on this time. John Byrne did that one issue, which is different than the way Frank Robbins and Don Perlin and, everybody
Wally
else doing Wally Wood.
All those guys, yeah.
But then she showed up...
Well, then after the Byrne issue, the story concluded with Tuska drawn and inked by Tress Altrapiani, and that was very nice too. That was just as good as any other one in the series, and it ended up that storyline, and then the book ended or whatever. And then she shows up, I don't know what the chronology is, but I think she shows up in a Monsters Unleashed, right, with that story about the rat monster and the succubus woman in the sewers, which was kind of a strange
And that was
story.
Drawn by Tony DeZuniga?
Tony DeZuniga, again, Isabella was involved in this also, I believe.
I'm going to say this and look like a fool, but for some reason, I've always gotten Tony DeZuniga and Tony Isabella confused. And I see Tony DeZuniga. I thought he was a writer. He's an artist, too.
Yeah, right.
I guess if your name's Tony, I'm just going to,
Yeah, he's going to confuse Isabella and DeZuniga.
Even though they're completely different.
They both
names.
Have A's at the end of their last name.
But they're both Tony.
Yeah.
But that work looked really nice. It was. It looked like it was done in gray washes or airbrush,
yeah,
but
beautiful.
It was...
It was a lot nicer to look at, and the story was a little bit different. It was a little more difficult to read a little bit. There's always something lost in translation or whatever, So.
Well, it looked like more supernatural than superhero.
And it was gorier, too, because it shows, the guy getting all, the rat monster, cuts him up and eats him or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it was the last story in that issue, but it was kind of neat.
It was a neat story. I guess Claremont was involved in it, too. I think it was plot by Isabella and script by Claremont, I think. So then after that, I think she just joins the Fantastic Four and, for a few issues.
Yeah, it was, I can't remember the name. Fantastic Four 177, I think.
77, yeah.
That's and Alan and I talked about some of those issues in the past. George Perez was drawing it. But that's the one where the Frightful Four were back together, missing the fourth member, which had been Medusa. And it was that weird issue where they had the Fantastic Four locked up, and they were having trials in the Baxter Building, and all these people wanted to be in the Frightful Four in a costume in the lobby.
The cowboy guy was there.
Yeah, Texas Twister.
Texas Twister, yeah.
And, but they were all down there coming up to do tryouts. And then at one point, while these tryouts are going horribly wrong, Tigra shows up at the window. But Tigra had Dolly Parton hair, and yeah. She talked like a Valley Girl. You know, somewhat, but, you know, and real flippant. And I said, she was always kind of serious and sincere. Like, you know, Greer Grant Nelson was always, you were hearing the story from her side, and she was always telling you about her insecurities and, you know, what she wasn't sure about and what meant to her. You know, she like a real person. And all of a sudden, she's kind of talking like Spider-Man, you know, with this big Dolly Parton hair. That's Tigra. She looks different. And she was a bad guy. And that's when the Thing was like, I'd met up with her. We were on good terms. Come to find out, she was just tricking them, trying to help the Fantastic Four. And next thing you know, she was with the Fantastic Four for what? 7, 8 issues?
Yeah, not that many.
And but it seemed to last a long time. So you had the Fantastic Four. You had Thundra, which never seemed to go away. You had Tigra. And they were both in love and fighting over Ben Grimm. I'm thinking, why does he always feel bad that he's the Thing when he's got all these women over the place, you know?
All these Amazons after him.
And I think before he could give
to blind women. But,
it was really neat. One of my best friends I was growing up with was always in love with Alicia Masters. Just thought she was the greatest, you know. But the last issue Tigra was in that I remember, something had occurred, and they're outside in the street, and Tiger's talking to Thundra, and then Thundra basically told him, you know, Ben Grimm is for me, and the Tiger's like, well, so you can't tell this kitty what to think, or something like that, and then Thundra walks off one way, and Tigra, cat-like, runs away on the other side, like they're all going to meet and fight again. I thought, that was bizarre.
Cat fight.
And then... I didn't see her again. That was the last I remember. I guess she went into some other team.
Later on, I think she was in the West Coast Avengers and stuff like that. She, I mean, we're only dealing with the 70s on this show. The 80s is a whole different ball of wax or whatever. You know, but she ended up joining up other teams.
Oh, no, I apologize. There was one more time I did see her, and that was Marvel Team-Up again.
Well, that's the one we were talking about before with the Man-Killer.
Well, no, that was the old one, but Tigra shows up. With,
that was the cab. Tigra shows up. Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Tigra went on. My favorite time in Marvel Team Up was when Chris Claremont and John Byrne were doing Marvel Team Ups, and they weren't always in succession. I remember they did an Adam Warlock story and then nothing else. And I remember I picked up The Wasp and Yellow Jacket and Ms. Marvel. And, that's one thing. I don't know. The Super Skrull, he had the powers of the Fantastic Four. And he could turn invisible, he could stretch, and he could flame on. I remember he was even in that Hanna-Barbera cartoon. But in that Marvel team-up, Captain Marvel and Spider-Man were fighting the Super Skrull. And what I thought was neat was when he used the Thing's strength, his hands turned into the Thing's. Wow, I didn't realize that. Well, that old... when he fought... Was he fought the cat or he fought Tigra in one of those old issues? We were just talking about.
Okay, he fought Tigra in Marvel Chillers.
Marvel Chillers. But in that one, John Byrne drew.
One of them, yeah.
Yeah. And at the end, I don't know if John Byrne did that one, but at the end, the Super Skrull was there and he had the Thing hands. Jack Kirby never did that. I don't know if John Byrne came up with that or somebody else.
I didn't know that. Okay.
But
he could turn. He could always turn into the Human Torch, couldn't he?
Yeah, and he had the Thing's strength, but they never showed it. He just had the strength. But I noticed it when John Byrne did that Marvel team-up, but it was in Marvel Chillers. I realize that now, I guess, is the first time. I don't know if anybody else had done it. Pretty neat. So it's like a little icon of each power. But when the King did it, he never showed that, which, you know, there are some things you can like that the King didn't come up with.
Yeah, he was almost perfect, but not entirely.
Well, he wanted other people to do stuff as well. He didn't want it his way.
Yeah, right.
But no, in the Marvel team-up, Spider-Man is captured by Kraven the Hunter, And Tigra is like all those Frazetta paintings. She's at his feet with a chain around her neck, and it looks like his sex toy. And what? One, John Byrne again drew her the John Byrne way, which is pretty neat. But I'm thinking, what? She's with Craven like that? Kind of find out, I guess it was the inhibitor collar that they tried to put on the cat way back. I don't know what it was.
Oh, yeah, right.
He had control over her, and then when she finally got away, she turned back into Tigra. But a little more flippant than she was as Greer Grant Nelson. And they tended to change her. And that's something I thought about reading that Creatures 1. Why is it when a man is turned to the Hulk or turned to the werewolf, he doesn't think straight? He's either an idiot or an animal. You know, the man he was is completely gone. He's just completely turned over to this other...
Yeah, like the wolf man.
Exactly. But if you turn into Tigra or She-Hulk, you get all the awesome power and a unique look, but you're still coherent in who you are.
Well, for a while there, I think the Hulk could have turned into a Hulk but was intelligent for a little while in the 60s, but then he went back to being the brute that he always was.
Yeah, and he stayed that way as a mindless brute. I think sometime in the early 90s, I think he...
He got intelligent again. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was he worked in Las Vegas or something like that.
But my whole life, the Hulk was this, Hulk did this, you know, and Werewolf by Night, same thing. But why is it when the women turn into it, all of a sudden...
I mean, would you want to see, like, this beautiful, stupid woman going like, rah, rah, you know, they didn't want it to be sexy. You know?
Well, again, the same thing. Why were they just trying to help women reach their full potential and not men as well?
Because, I don't know, because those books were more geared to, like, you know, women's livers. I don't know. It was like man-haters. I don't know. I don't know what to deal with. I mean, especially in that Man-Kill. That was such a man-hating issue. That woman, that she was an Olympic skier, that some guy pushed her off the ledge, and she screwed up her hand. She became this man-hating monster or whatever.
Yeah, but who wrote that? It wasn't the woman that wrote all those cat stories.
Who was it that wrote that one? I don't remember right now.
It must have been a guy.
I'm thinking Jerry Conway.
Yeah, see.
I'm thinking Jerry Conway did that.
That's
one.
The thing. All of a sudden, the man takes over. Let's do the...
This is a man
the broadest common denominator here.
Yeah, he wasn't the bad. His big claim to fame was killing off Gwen Stacy.
When I say that, I like Jerry Conway. I like some of the stuff he wrote.
Right. Yeah, it was all right.
And, But Gwen Stacy, that one's rocked the whole comics world, you know.
That's his, that's his fault.
Well, he was writing the Fantastic Four, I guess. They were getting divorced. Reed and Sue were separated. You know, I remember some of his books fondly.
Hey, but let's talk about, because we're getting, you know, pretty much into the show. Let's talk about what happened to the cat.
Oh, one other thing about the cat, those four issues. I guess they had a fifth issue. It never came out, and Ramona Freyden penciled it.
Never came out? I thought I read something about Ramona Freyden.
Yeah, she, because like I said, they were trying to get women creators.
Oh, that sucks, and it never came
but
out.
But the fifth issue, Ramona Freyden was brought in to pencil it, but it was never, you know, the book was canceled, and it was never released.
Huh.
So I don't know what it looks like. I just read that. But anyway, what Al's talking about was after Tigra, and this is what confused me, was the cat came back in the Avengers as Hellcat. And it was?
Patsy Walker.
Patsy Walker.
Who was like a Millie the Model type, teenage girl comic book character.
No, my buddy Brett.
From the 40s,
yeah,
I think.
My buddy Brett, when I was in college, we were talking about these because this is when George Perez came on to do the Avengers. I love George Perez. I hadn't read all those Avengers books. I'd read some of them. And the cat was in it. I thought, wait a minute, I thought she turned into Tigra. And she had red hair. And like I said, Greer Grant Nelson had black hair. She had red hair as Tigra. And sometimes artists drew Tigra completely different. So I'm thinking, well, maybe she just got tired of being Tigra and turned back into herself and she is the cat again. But her hair stayed red. Who knows? That's in comics
all the time.
Yeah. But she would think, whenever she was trying to use the weapons, she kept talking about her husband was some type of cop. She always brought up her husband. And they were still showing her thought balloons and her perspective. Like, it wasn't always like Captain America where everything was easy and perfect. even though she was doing it, she goes, I got to get used to this. Oh, I'm falling short. I got to try this, you know. Well, it ended up, it was Patsy Walker, and my buddy Britt said that she was Millie the Model's roommate.
Yeah.
I said, who was Millie the Model? Well, it was a Kathy Kane, Archie-type character. And if you go online and look up Millie the Model or Patsy Walker, billions of these Archie-looking kind of comic books come up, but Millie the Model was a model, and Patsy was her best friend and roommate, and a lot of the covers is basically the girls being glamorous or being jealous of each other. And Patsy Walker had her own title, and it was the total Barbie doll kind of thing of the 30s and 40s, and all the way to the 60s. And I guess the 60s, it looked like the early 60s.
Yeah, wasn't there some book called Patsy and Hetty or something like that?
Yeah, there was several of them. There was a Patsy Walker book, there was a Patsy and Helly, I think there was a Patsy and Millie or something.
Yeah, and Stan Lee was involved in all of them.
Dan DiCarlo drew some of them.
Al Hartley, I think, drew some of them. Maybe Stan Goldberg, I don't know. Some of the guys that ended up doing work for Archie, too, probably worked on them.
But, you know, I mean, these girls were always, you know, in mink stoles and, you know, yeah, glamour gowns.
The way it should be.
You know, the big hourglass figure dresses. They're yeah, always exactly, shopping yeah, and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah,
and, but
you can dream.
But anyway, she... Al supplied me some of the Avengers comics that shows up and has the first issue with her in it. I guess, first... And I don't quite understand. Patsy Walker, as a civilian, is with the Avengers. And then the next issue, I'm thinking when George Perez comes in...
Well, what happened was that she Englehart brought her back because he saw her like an FF annual. He goes, "That'd be cool to bring this character back because Steve Englehart, because you know it's like an old Marvel character that I can do something with." So he linked her up with the Beast in the Amazing Adventures books.
That's right.
And she shows up. She's married to like some army guy, so her name is Pat Baxter now, and the guy turns out to be like a real jerk. And in the middle of the whole thing, she ends up helping the Beast because the officer, they're after Hank Pym for some reason. I can't even remember why. So she lies for him to help him out, to give him an alibi for why, because they thought he was somewhere where he shouldn't have been or whatever. And she cuts a deal with her saying that, like, if she helps him out, he would get her into being a superhero because she wanted to be a superhero. So then when she shows up in the Avengers 141... out of the blue, she goes, "Hank, remember that deal we made?" And she broke up with her husband, and now she wants to be a superhero. So Hank's like, "Well, you guys, let's just humor her and, you know, let her be." Because, you know, after all, Rick Jones was, you know, a superhero, too, or whatever.
See, that's a red flag right there,
yeah,
Rick
exactly,
Jones. But
yeah.
See, that's the other one.
Why
is it when it's a man,
that.
He messes everything up in the whole Marvel Universe? When it's a woman, the same situation, she turns into a really good character. Same thing. Rick Jones was the one that caused Bruce Banner to become the Hulk. He was the one that, you know, messed up Captain Marvel and had to share the same body. He messes everything up.
Women are better, man. They can turn
That's
to
what
superheroes.
I'm starting to see.
They can turn to superheroes, giant superheroes, without turning into, like, nasty. And then they don't mess things up when they become superheroes. That's because they're better than guys.
If there was no women on the planet, I guess we would have blown ourselves up long ago.
Exactly, yeah. Or other things. But at any rate, so she ends up joining the Avengers, and they go on some... They go in to fight the Squadron Supreme.
Which was the Justice League...
Knockoff by Englehart.
But they... one thing about the Beast, as I said, it was some old 72 issue... where the Beast from the X-Men is working for this company doing research, and he takes that chemical.
Those are those issues,
yeah. And he becomes the Beast everybody knows. He was originally gray, and it didn't sell, and later they changed him to blue.
That happens in those issues with Patsy Walker, yeah.
Yeah, and when he...
Those are drawn by Tom Sutton,
yeah,
too, and written by Englehart.
When Patsy Walker is talking, she marries this guy that's in the military. And then he ends up getting a job. We're doing security for this corporate
Roxxon.
Yeah, Roxxon.
Yeah.
And which is all through the Avengers thing. I remember that. But Roxxon was a big corporation that took over. And the problem was he got the job of security. And since he was the military was the biggest client to Roxxon. It was like a marriage born in heaven. And she said that that was going to promote him through the sky easily. And it's good. But she said, it's what Al described. It was kind of like Greer Grant Nelson's story, that the guy felt that the woman should be at home and, you know, take care of the house. And it seemed to me like Patsy Walker was all ready for that. But then, I guess at one point they had a meager salary. They couldn't live off what he was making, and he was always kind of taking it out on her. And she was trying hard to keep it together. But when he got to the other job, things were better. But the problem was, the job was getting to him, because a lot of responsibility, a lot of stress, a lot of pressure. You know, it's like trying to play ping pong with 700 different balls in one paddle. And then there were security measures going on. There's some kind of animal that was breaking in and causing all this trouble. Well, she found out it was Hank McCoy. It was the Beast. And I guess I just thumbed through these, but he's on the floor captured.
That's right, yeah.
And as she's talking to him, she realizes who he is, and she realizes he's the one doing all this corporate espionage, you know. And that's when they make the deal you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah,
so it all ties back to those comics I didn't like in 72.
The Amazing Adventures, yeah.
But
which aren't bad now. You can read them now. They're fine.
But when I was thumbing through those this morning before Al came over, and they had Captain America and Iron Man were asking her, Patsy Walker, to become the Cat.
Well, yeah, because they found the costume. They were going through Roxanne's warehouses, and they found the costume there. She was already with them. She said, why don't you become like a superhero, the Cat? So she told them to turn around while she put on her cat costume.
Yeah, and when I saw that, I would have loved that when I was 12. But
yeah, right.
They turned around. They're both uncomfortable. And it shows her unzip her shirt. You know, it doesn't show anything.
In the shadow, yeah, silhouette, yeah.
And then she changes into the Cat. And then all of a sudden, it's this really famous, often reprinted George Perez splash page.
Yeah,
the last
right.
page where she's in that cat position. But did Hank McCoy give her anything to give her superpowers?
No, I think she got superpowers. The costume had powers, I think. The costume had those claws or whatever. She was. They said that she was already like an athlete, like a surfer or something. So she already had abilities. Later on, I think I read, because I didn't say, you know, she joined the... it gets really weird. After the Avengers, she joins the Defenders. She gets powers, I think, from Moondragon or somebody like that. But then the powers go away, and she ends up marrying Son of Satan. She becomes like the wife of Damon Hellstrom. And then... like, you know, it turns out that she's like, he gets, later on in the 90s, Damon Hellstrom gets more powers. She goes crazy. She commits suicide. Then they bring her back. It's really convoluted. You go to the Wikipedia page if you want to find out about it. We're just talking about these issues. It gets, Marvel characters get put through the grinder so much that you don't even know what's coming out in the next issue.
Yeah, I didn't read any of those.
I didn't either. I may have seen them, but I never read them.
No, that's a... I just remember reading it, and I thought it was the original Cat. I didn't realize...
That's what I thought, too. Yeah. I thought that Patsy Walker was the original Cat, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
I was like, well, okay, now this is interesting. I didn't know all this.
Greer Grant Nelson. But Greer Grant was only the Cat for four issues, plus
and
another
Tiger
guest
forever
appearance.
Since. Yeah.
And then became Tiger, which I think I like a lot better.
Yeah, I do, too. And Patsy Walker looks exactly like the Cat, so if he can be Hellcat now, and... shows up in other books. I'm assuming she shows up in books frequently. I read somewhere there was a book that came out a few years ago called Marvel Divas in 2009 or 2010, and she was in it too. So she like appears in like, now that we went to when we went to Wilson's, they gave you, I don't think I got one, but you got like a little card that's an upcoming series of Hellcat.
I'm trying to find it. Oh, here it is. Yeah, they got an upcoming series. I really like the cover. I wanted to subscribe to it, but when I went online and looked up some of the artwork...
Does it look like that?
Sort of, but a little more loose. It's Glam, Fam, and Bam, Patsy Walker, a.k.a. Hellcat Number 1. It's by Kate Leth and Brittany Williams, both women. And it's on sale in December. And the Cat is holding an issue of Patsy Walker from,
yeah, okay.
Which is really awesome.
Now, if she, if in one of her issues she goes and she turns around and fights Tigra or Tigra, then that's going to be, then I might have to buy that one.
Well, it would be neat, but Al had read and turned me on to She-Hulk. What was the creative team on that?
Javier Pulido was the writer, and I can't remember the
No, he was the artist, wasn't it?
He was the artist. I can't remember who the writer was.
But it was 12 issues where She-Hulk left her the firm she was with as an attorney and set up her own. And she had her own crew, and Patsy Walker was one of them. And she was kind of like the investigator. And, I mean, she'd be walking around just as Patsy Walker, but then when she needed any kind of help, she'd turn into Hellcat and go out and take care of things. She's always been a character and a thing. I guess what always surprised me was that the original Cat had hyper powers, kind of like Captain America or something. Whereas the second one, Patsy Walker, had the costume. Different thing altogether. If you're just a regular, I understand she was an athlete.
I guess she ended up getting supernatural powers at one point, you know. But at the beginning, all she was just a athlete in a costume with a bunch of superheroes. You know, she could kick ass, I guess.
But see, when you're talking, I was talking about the old Cat issues and how they looked. There's a lot of blacks, a lot of,
you know. Wally Wood had a lot of shadowing and stuff.
Well, even the cover, though, which I don't think Wally Wood did.
Yeah, he did.
Okay, but it was all black and everything. I look at this one, you know, it's lighter color, and it's white. But this is what I mean. It could have had a look like this one. And
I wouldn't have sold back then.
Probably not, but I'm just saying that...
That almost looks like it could have been like a Harvey version of the Cat or something.
Which
like
girls
that.
Liked.
Which girls could have liked, yeah. No, you're right.
I'm going to say that I liked them too, and I wasn't a girl, but...
yeah.
Even though I had bell bottoms and long hair.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, this almost looks like a Harvey Comics version of, you know, Marvel was still serious comic books. They weren't funny books. Yeah. They were serious comic books.
Now, when I looked at those, the Hellcat, I looked them up online. And I guess they're having variant covers. Some of those covers are really neat. And I saw part of the story, and I was going to subscribe to it, but I thought I'm going to
see
it.
Just wait until you see the first issue or something.
But anyway, that's how the Hellcat came about. So now, not only, you know, the Cat is now Tigra, and Patsy Walker is the Hellcat. And
well, if you look at the back, look at this Marvel. There's going to be like 12 number ones coming out in December. Did you see this?
Yeah, aren't they relaunching everything?
Yeah, Inhumans, X-Men, Daredevil, Guardians of Infinity, Patsy Walker, Red Wolf, Scarlet Witch, Spidey, Squadron Supreme, Star Brand, and Nightmask, Totally Awesome Hulk, and Weird World. Well, I don't know. Maybe we'll buy some of these.
Well, some of them might
Why
be
not?
Good.
But, why the hell not?
But like I said, it's a neat character. She's been around for a while.
Both of them. I never knew there was so much, you know, relationship between the three. You know, like I said, I never knew the Cat was Tigra. Mentioned that comic book that I never saw.
Well, we were in college when Britt told me about Patsy Walker. The Hellcat was a member of, or she was Millie the Model's roommate. I didn't know who Millie the Model was, and he explained to me. And then he laughed and said she showed up in the Avengers in one issue. Well, I was looking at, I didn't read all the issues you gave me, but I was kind of thumbing through, wondering where she was. If I can find it, I'll post that on the blog.
Where the Model shows up?
In the Avengers, I guess in a panel or something, just briefly.
Okay.
I love stuff like that. Even though I wasn't familiar with the character, it's kind of neat that there's a back history and they're using all these characters. I thought it was neat that Millie...
Steve Englehart.
I love Steve Englehart.
No, I mean, he was creative.
Yeah.
And he was inventive.
I love Coyote. He was the one that did Coyote. I just wish that he would have done them all with Steve Lealola.
Well, you know, there was a Coyote. Remember Eclipse Magazine? There was Coyote in that, too.
Marshall Rogers.
Was that Steve Englehart and Marshall Rogers? Okay.
Yeah, Coyote was Steve Englehart's character.
Okay.
And the first issue was... They put it in the Eclipse Magazine. What was it, Eclipse Monthly or something?
Yeah, that thing. Yeah, I have some of those.
And they had them in a graphic novel. I'd always pick it up and look at it. I never bought it. I just never was interested. But it's called I Am Coyote. And it told his story, how he became. And then they brought it to Epic Comics. And they really pushed it. They had drawings. And it was Steve Lealola, who I love dearly. And it kind of looked like Steve Lealola, but a little Mobius influence. And he put out two incredible issues that I just keep buying whenever I see them. And They were fantastic. Well, then the next one, they had some other guy. Butch Guys.
Yeah, he drew it.
He drew the third one. And in that one, I was so disappointed. I mean, Butch Guys is a good artist, but he's not the same kind. And Steve Englehart said, change of artist, why? And he said, well, everybody saw that first issue of, you know, Coyote and just were flabbergasted. And he says, I was one of them. He says, it was incredible. The second issue was right up there, too. He says, but let me explain. It took Steve 7 months to draw that first issue. And he says, it took him, I think he said, 2 or 4 months to draw the second issue. I says, you can't do that and make money. And so, basically, he switched. And, you know, Butch Keese, I guess, drew that one to get him by. And then he got I'm guessing it was a Vietnamese artist. I think Tron, Trans or something, but it wasn't bad, and I guess he finished the run. And I think later on, Steve Lalola inked an issue somewhere. But
yeah, we'll deal with Coyote at some point.
Well, I'm just saying, I never really read the whole series, but Steve Englehart was really close to that, and I guess
Mantis.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't know. I thought he was a really creative writer. I really enjoyed it, and I liked how he tied things in.
Yeah, so. He was good. He was good. I mean, I'm just saying he's got a little too far out,
yeah.
A little too chemically imbalanced. But you know, we'll leave that for another time, I guess. All right. Well, there's like our best interpretation of the Hellcat, Cat, Tigra, Triumvirate, or whatever.
There you go.
You know, next time we'll come up with some other strange character or whatever to deal with.
But thanks for bearing with us when we're talking about these 70s Bronze Age characters for a bit. But hey, they're comics that I remember fondly, and I really enjoyed talking about.
I actually enjoy reading them, because I maybe may have bought some of them, but bypassed them. I just bought them for the art and not like necessarily
right.
Follow the storyline. Because we were talking before, if you were a kid back in 74, there's no way you could have tied up this entire storyline of all these books going all over, like Marvel Chillers, The Cat, Giant Size Creatures, and all this. So to be able to find files of them or at least find some issues and tie them all up together is kind of a interesting, you know, challenge in itself.
It's been fun. It was hard to buy every issue of Spider-Man.
It was hard, yeah.
Because, you know, you have to go store to store. When you're a kid, you don't really have
this
that.
This is before comic shops.
Yeah. And so a character like Cat, you know, or Tigra.
Good luck.
Yeah, like I said, it was so. It was,
and they would just show up, like, all of a sudden it's like, you don't know that she's going to show up a year later in the Fantastic Four.
Exactly. And when I read that and Ben Grimm was talking about Marvel 2, I went, what? She's been around? I thought she was gone.
That's it.
And of course, you know, when they do show up, they may have Dolly Parton here and talk like a Valley Girl. But
and, you know, you can take it or leave it. I'll take it. All right, well.
Anyway, thanks a lot. Thanks for listening. If you get a chance and you don't mind, please leave us an iTunes review. It really helps us out in the ratings. And in the meantime,
read more comics.
Find Al's other podcast, Slow Robot A Go-Go, Dallas's webcomic, The Mighty Blue, and Al's blog, Destination Nightmare on the sidebar of our blog at bunchofdorks.com.
And click on the Cyclops!